Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 431. Hey, Jonah Ray.
Hey, Chris. How's it going?
Well, it's good to be here for a 66.66666% repeating hostful intro of the Nerdist Podcast.
Yeah.
Where is that Matt Myra? He's writing.
Oh, he's
writing for At Midnight.
Scribbling away.
It's on every night.
I don't know
after
why
Colbert.
He's using a paper and pen to write, but...
Well, I don't know why he's scribbling. He should be writing words.
Yeah, that's true.
He should be forming words.
Yeah, he should. Words... maybe into sentences, maybe put some commas and periods in there.
It's all part of the Myra. Oh, he has his periods, all right.
Yay!
Hey, it's all part of the Myra method.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
I tell you.
Oh, gee. Oh, yeah, Myra, he's one lovable curmudgeon. I tell you what, he just, you know, he's like, what's the opposite of a ray of sunshine? I'll tell you what that guy is. He is antimatter.
Also, I'll be performing at the Carolina Theater in Durham, North Carolina, November 8th.
You'll be providing smiles, where Matt Myra usually provides the opposite.
He provides smiles.
That's true.
People love him.
Come on. Just go with the bit.
I don't want to yes and that.
Don't bail on
me. I want to know but that.
I want to know but that.
I also am doing some stand-up dates in December in Chicago and Minneapolis and Seattle. And I think Matt Myra's going to be there as well,
doing some jokes
with me. I'd like to thank for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, Audible.com. Go to audible.com/nerdist and get a free audiobook download.
That's fun.
You could listen whenever and wherever you want, Jonah.
I do. I love audiobooks. I've listened to Born Standing Up, the Steve Martin book, probably 20 times.
Really?
Yeah, it's great. It's so relaxing.
Is it relaxing?
Yeah, it's really relaxing. It's just the way his voice, the way he tells the story, and then there's the little interludes with nice little banjo on it. It's great.
It is nice.
Yeah, it's very good.
Love Steve.
Yeah.
Never be able to have him on the podcast, though. Mm-hmm. I won't be able to handle it.
That's fine.
That's the one person I won't be able to
handle. Let that be that, then.
We'll just let that be out there. We'll just pretend in our heads that it happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know how we can pretend that we podcast, and then by going to audible.com/nerdist and download Born Standing Up by Steve Martin. And then if you know the book well enough, you can just anticipate what's coming up and then just ask him the question. So then what happened after that first show in San Francisco?
Cut up that book.
Where you were walking home and you had that wad of cash in your pocket. How did that make you feel?
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
you just like hit pause and then... That's how you could practice podcasting, people.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great idea.
I just came up with a really fun
idea. We can fucking podcast anybody that has an audiobook autobiography.
That's right. Audible.com has over 100,000 titles to choose from. Every genre, Audible has you covered. Again, that's audible.com/nerdist for your free audiobook download. This podcast was Ezra Koenig of Vampire Weekend. You were at that one. He was fun.
I was. Yeah, he was a good guy.
Vampire Weekend's third album, Modern Vampires of the City, is out now.
It's a great album.
You dug it.
I think it might be one of their best.
Yeah, one of the three.
One of the three,
that
yeah.
They've done.
Yeah, yeah.
But we recorded this at Meltdown, and I don't know. I don't really have anything to say other than it was just a fun... You know, a lot of times, especially with bands, I never know what to expect. I feel like musicians can kind of be the trickiest ones. Because you just don't know, you know, maybe you're Marilyn Manson going on Talking Dead. I don't know. Maybe you made out with a bottle of vodka before you came on a show. I'm not saying that happened, but maybe you did.
I thought you were talking about musicians.
Oh!
We're all stars in the dope show.
That's Pussy Talking Donut Dope Show, though.
Yeah.
Yo.
We're all stars in it.
Dope
Which one?
Show.
Dope Show.
It's in the dope show, yo.
Yo, that was a dope show.
You want to get some fro-yo with your dope show, yo?
Yo. You see, Sons of Anarchy, that's a dope show.
Dope show. Hey, there's a truck outside. You want to get some snow cones?
No.
Okay. I know that did not fit the meter, but I still had to express my positive affirmation.
Dig.
Yo. So Ezra Koenig, great guest, Vampire Weekend, Jonah Ray, Chris Hardwick, signing off from the Nerdist Podcast intro. Episode number 431. I know it sounds like I'm signing off, but we're actually starting the podcast, so that's actually poor professional broadcasting lingo.
Good night, and good luck.
Nah.
What was that?
That was just a little extra emotion that had to come out.
Wow. I just got
a little
glimpse into how you come.
Lyle. Who's Lyle? What do you mean? Who's Lyle? Who's Lyle? No, but you're saying
you're just Lyle down there, and don't worry about it.
Lyle.
Peter.
I have a really bad cum tell. People always know when I'm
Lyle.
Are you coming in there? No.
Come tell that.
Start the podcast.
So what about the fire, Chris? What about the fire that's happening?
I'll put it out.
Get the open up the hose box.
Okay. Oh, I dropped the box.
It's getting worse.
Oh, we're sorry to Ezra Koenig of Vampire Weekend because everyone tuned out by now and switched over to WTF or How Did This Get Made? And that sounded like this. All right.
Step. Door closed.
Lyle.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Here is a water.
Oh, great. Thanks.
I'm not sure where I went.
If you want a smaller water, sorry.
Would you like a thimble of water?
Yeah, this is like extra small.
Yeah.
Would you like a couple of drops of water?
This is to create more waste. It's a great way to...
We want our guests throw your hands to up, feel Katie big.
First. People take 2 sips of the big bottles and then waste it. So
not
I
me.
Water. So many people do.
Yeah.
I pound through
it's
this
good to have options.
Liter and a half.
Do you need to wear it?
You don't have to, but if you like them,
yeah, don't.
Do you want to live in the physical space?
I think so.
All right.
Well,
I split the diff.
You know, I'm going to start with them off.
Okay.
See how it goes.
Yeah. All right.
Well, you sound really weird. I mean, you probably can't hear that, but you sound so weird right now.
I'm sure. Okay. All right. Well,
I know that. I feel weird.
Now I like this tune too.
Yeah, this is good.
Better. They're here if you need them.
Okay,
I'm just listening for like levels and stuff.
Okay, sure
and narcissism, right, cool. Right?
And yeah, I like to hear my own voice.
Yeah.
So I can masturbate later.
That is the only reason to listen.
Yeah, that's really. Are you guys playing in town this weekend?
Last night
we played last night.
So yeah. No.
Yeah, it's over.
So sorry, I was traveling back from Boston yesterday.
Oh, cool.
How was the show?
It was very good.
Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
Have you played there before?
We played there before. More people came this time, though. So that was good.
Yeah, Beirut opening up for you?
Yeah, it was a great bill. It's us in Beirut. Nathan Fielder came.
Nice.
I love that Nathan Fielder.
Love him.
I was just talking about one of his pranks. I like that. Did you see the one he did on Twitter where he told people to text someone saying, hey, we need to talk? Like, text your significant other,
hey, we need
to talk, and then just don't text them back.
That
no
is
matter
a
what.
Really shitty thing to do to someone.
Holy shit. Like people would reveal so much of themselves. Like, it's like, what's wrong? What do you, is this, did you find out?
Is it
because I made out with this person?
Oh
yeah.
God damn it. That's brutal.
Yeah. He did another one where it was, 2 ounces for 50 and then text immediately afterward, like
something.
Yeah. Like text your parents with it. And then that wasn't for you. And then like a lot of the results I was looking through was like people, parents going, are you dealing drugs again?
Oh, no. Maybe if you have a history, don't play that prank. Because then it's not a prank anymore.
Did he just watch from the side or was he in the crowd?
Oh, no. He came and did like a little performance. Oh, yeah, I wasn't just saying Nathan Fielder was in the audience.
No.
But I mean, that it was cool that he was there. He came. So after Beirut played, he came on stage and... kind of came out. I was like, oh, Vampire, we can ask me to introduce them. But I asked them a favor, too. I wanted, you know, to take a minute. And then he's like, you know, my girlfriend's in the audience and everybody's clapping and he brings her on stage. And then he's talking about, like, how much he loves her. And then he starts playing that Lone Star song, Amazed. And he starts, like, singing it really awkwardly and she gets, like, really uncomfortable. And then he proposes to her and it's, like, on stage and she refused to... marry him. It was funny.
That's great. What was the reaction from people?
Well, I was watching it from like on a screen backstage. People seemed into it. Yeah. I mean, I think at this point, people, I don't think people really sweating the like if it was real or not. But
yeah,
I think people were enjoying it.
What is it? Is it stressful to play the Hollywood Bowl, or is it like, yay, we made it? Or is it, there's so much that you have to worry about that you don't get to think about it?
You know, it's, well, there's like little bits of stress. I mean, being on tour, I always got to worry about my voice. So, you know, I got to like wake up in the morning and be like, oh, we got a big show tonight. Can I sing? But outside of that, I feel like increasingly calm when we walk on stage for a big show. People put more pressure on it because it's like it's the Hollywood Bowl and there's more people coming and it's like LA and stuff, but it's really not, yeah, it doesn't feel like much to worry about lately.
I mean, it's just, it's not like a small rock club. It's a fucking, it's like one of the most famous venues in the country.
Yeah, no, it's true. But then it's like there's not that much, I mean, worst case scenario, something goes really wrong, you have to cancel the show. Other than that, there's not that much that can really happen.
Do you have anxiety about that?
That I do have anxiety about. It happened once, and it was definitely one of the worst days of my life. I basically realized that my voice was totally gone, and I really thought I was going to be able to do it. And we had this, few thousand people out at this, like, beautiful spot near Seattle. Basically had to send somebody on stage to say, performing tonight, and I could, like, hear everybody booing and stuff. Like, sitting backstage, and then I had to, like, go to the doctor and get steroids.
Oy.
Yeah, you look great.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, real buff.
But that's also how I got jacked, so it turned my life
around.
Some
sweet pecs there.
Yeah, so
do you find LA audiences to be more disinterested than regular audiences?
Well, the Hollywood Bowl is an interesting place because, you know, at most times when you play a general admission show, you have the most hardcore fans come at 11 a.m. or earlier to be in the front row. So you're playing in the front, you know, everybody in front has signs and they're psyched. Whereas at a seated venue, those people are in the back.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then in the front, you have, you know, people who probably paid a lot of money for the, you know, ticket on StubHub or something like that. Yeah. So you kind of have this, like, it's funny, it's flipped. So especially the Hollywood Bowl is so big and so steep. In the, you know, looking out in the distance, and I can kind of see these little pockets of people jumping down, and then I look down right in front of me, and there's like some teenage girls and their dad like sitting on his phone, so,
eating lobster.
It's not a rock venue,
right?
It's like there's like the reverse pit, where the pit is like the people are jumping around like way on the hill in the back,
and they're getting it in the past. Like, by the time the music hits them, you've already played it. It's been a few seconds before that. That's what they...
Oh,
like,
it's on a totally different chord.
It's like TV astronomy. That go out into space.
Yeah, exactly. It's just so far. Like, every time you see those, like, old huge concerts and, like, they get everyone clapping, and it's just like, I love seeing
totally out of sync.
Yeah, totally out of sync from what's going on the stage.
But I'm not gonna say that that's an LA thing. That's a specific...
The seated,
like,
amphitheater.
Yeah, because we've had great shows in LA. I don't think LA crowds are particularly... disinterested or anything.
How do you know what has to happen in your brain for you to say, like, this show went well, or I don't think we got it? Like, what is it, an audience reaction, or is it your performance? What's the checklist?
Well,
pussy.
There was a lot of pussy.
There we go.
How much pussy?
All the pussy.
Yeah.
Every pussy? All the
pussies.
Pussy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm a kind of a... I can be, like, kind of negative about... I don't know. I just feel like it takes a lot for me to feel like that was a great show. But, you know, you have to have a... For a show really to stand out, thankfully, we rarely have awful shows. Rarely walk off stage and be like, wow, those people hated us. So it needs to be, like, everybody, like, jumping up and down and, like, hands in the air to feel like it was a great show. And, you know, sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't, but people express themselves differently at concerts.
Yeah, and you're also always, you're not always, as a performer, the best judge of whether or not, like, you have some cues in your mind where you go, oh, well, if people are doing A and B, then that must therefore mean that they were enjoying it. But that's not always the case.
Right. So, and I always have to remember that when I'm at concerts, I'm not in the front row, you know, screaming my lungs out after every song. Like, I'm the type of guy, I'll hang in the back, maybe after 30 minutes, go get a drink, maybe, like, stand by the bathroom, look at my phone for a few minutes, then go back in. And it's not because I dislike the concert, but, you know, some part of a concert sometimes is coming in and out and, like, you know, taking a break and talking to your friends for a second. Yeah. Whereas when you're on stage and you look and you can really see somebody on their phone or talking to their friend, you feel like, God, this person must be having, like, a terrible time. But it's not true, I think.
You do forget. You do forget when you're, you know, and you can get so mad and be like, God, why can't that guy? And you're like, oh, well, I was that guy, and I was enjoying the show fine. I just had to quick do a thing, or I had to check something. People don't even think about it anymore. Well, especially now that people, I mean, can you imagine, like, performing in the, like, in the 80s or the 70s? Let's say the 70s. No one could be focused on anything else other than the show. And whatever drugs they had with them.
Yeah. It must have been awful. So boring. Yeah, I can't be... I mean, you know, this is the live tweet era. I can't be mad at... You know, because that's like a kind of a generational thing that some people are like, oh my God, everybody's holding up their phone, taking pictures and taking videos. Like, it's like you're not even there. But I feel like a little bit more on the side of the kids, you know, that I can relate to that. Like, it's cool. You have your phone out, take a lot of pictures... probably like tweet throughout the show about what's going on, and I can't be mad at it.
How old are you?
I'm 29.
You're 29. Okay, so you are you're really more on the side of the audience than like someone who's who doesn't understand. I mean, like you grew up with this culture,
right? I grew up in the internet era. I mean, but maybe.
But you remember when there wasn't really internet, right? You were young, but you must remember some of it.
Yeah, no, when I first went to concerts. People were not live tweeting them. It's true. Yeah. I saw like both sides of it.
They were live zining them. They were just making zines in the middle of a show. Yeah.
Dude, where's the stapler? Dude, did you bring the stapler?
You're going to live zine.
Oh, I got a Kinko's key.
No, dude. Like
really loud Xerox machine.
Yeah, it's going on.
Yeah. See, I'm glad that those days are behind us.
It's been so
I got to buy one seat for me, three for the Xerox.
Yeah.
I'm just passing back. Pass it back, bro.
Do you prefer it now? You think it's better now?
I think so. I mean, I'm constantly maybe it's just because of Twitter and the internet that I feel like I get more a taste of what, you know, teenagers are thinking these days than I would have in another era.
They ain't thinking about anything at all.
That may be true, but I always kind of think like I think it is kind of cooler that people can you know, do things the way they want to and can, you know, experience a concert. I don't think there's anything cool about whatever forcing people to like stare at you during a show. Just like, you know, with music, you can't force people to buy an album anymore.
Right.
You know, they have to want to give you money for it. So in some ways I feel like this is the best era to be a musician.
But isn't it crazy that there was a time where artists were just blissfully unaware of what their fans thought, other than the fact that they came out to a show. And then they would leave the show and never really have any idea. Like, the only real connection they would have had was, oh, what did they write in Rolling Stone? Or what did the, you know, what...
What happened at the signing at Tower Records.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but otherwise, no idea of, like, every little thing that people liked or didn't like or what they would do differently or, like... As performers now, we're so much more connected to everyone that it's almost like you can't... Those days that I think of the sort of clueless, like, whatever kind of rock star guys, those are dead.
Yeah, but I guess probably the anxiety levels of musicians and artists probably hasn't changed that much. You know, like, it's true. Now you have the option to read every little thing about you, and that's something that you have to manage and, you know, hopefully not do. But even back in the day, people would, whatever, read the Rolling Stone review and read Little Press. I feel like they would still probably go crazy worrying about how everybody felt. And so in that sense, I feel like it's probably not that different.
I guess maybe that's true, because then they wouldn't know. They would have no way of knowing.
Sounds great.
Right, they get like one bad review in the Village Voice. Well, you know, it's like Billy Joel used to like go on like tirades when he'd get like a bad review in like a local paper in New York, like on stage. Maybe he would have chilled out a little bit if he had all people like, you know, tweeting at him all the time. Then like, there would just, Billy.
There'd just be like a stream of all caps tweets. Then he would be
Billy Joel was the Kanye West.
Then he would be Kanye.
Yeah, he might have been.
Yeah. Well, so how do you guys keep from, you know, it's interesting to hear you say like, I'm sort of negative about stuff. Like, is it, do you really feel never satisfied? Do you feel like that's necessary? Do you think it's necessary to never be satisfied?
That's an interesting question. It's been on my mind a lot. I'm often, I surprise myself by how dissatisfied I am with seemingly satisfying experiences. I mean, that's like just a general life thing that I think everybody has sometimes. Like, you know, you dream about something big, like a big concert. You put a lot of pressure on it, and then it happens, And then you're kind of left feeling like, but was it actually good? Was it as good as it could be? And then you kind of realize that maybe that those questions, that anxiety never really leaves you. And I do think it's partially just, yeah, what it means to be an artist, that you do have to be hard on yourself. Sometimes I think making our albums, we're not, making our albums was often very difficult. I mean, there are like great moments, but when I boil it down to like a feeling, there's definitely like a lot of stress and anxiety related to it, but I think without it, they wouldn't have been as good. So I'm of kind of like two minds about it, like that you do have to be hard on yourself, but then you also got to enjoy yourself sometimes.
Yeah.
Do you though? Do you enjoy yourself sometimes?
Well, usually after the show.
After the show.
I mean, just because the weight of the performance is over and you can kind of relax. So like last night, got on stage. I wasn't nervous. I felt like very calm, but in my mind I was wondering like, is this good? Are people enjoying it? You know, watching the guy on his phone, that type of thing. And then finally after the show, that's when I could finally enjoy myself. So it'd be nice to kind of find more of a middle ground, but yeah, you gotta worry, I guess.
I was thinking lately, I don't know why I've been thinking about this, but I have a nephew, and there's one moment of him when he was a kid that sticks out in my mind, and I'm just sort of realizing now why I've been thinking about it lately. My brain was trying to express something. I didn't know what it was. But when he was like, I don't know, maybe 8 years old, it was Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And he got a fucking amazing haul of presents.
Nintendo 64. I've seen the video.
No.
That kid goes crazy.
No, that's not that kid.
It's not that kid?
No, it's not that kid.
Check down the story then.
Sorry. Check back in.
Okay. No, Chris, your Wikipedia states clearly it's that kid.
That is that
kid. Might be wrong.
Okay, well, Wikipedia says it, then it's true. But so he gets this. He gets like all these presents that he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're sort of expecting him to be like, he's going to be the happiest kid in the world because he got all this stuff he wanted. And it was watching this child who had no filter or you know, like just didn't have grown up skills yet, trying to process getting all of these things that he wanted.
Mm.
And he didn't know how to react. He was like, he looked and then he cried for a second and then he hid. Because in his mind, he wanted all these things, and they were given to him, but he didn't know, like, what I imagine that he was going through was, am I supposed to be happy? Am I supposed to be sad? This is the thing that I wanted. I don't know how to, everyone was looking at him and expecting him to be like, huh? Huh?
Yeah.
And he just didn't know how to give whatever, he didn't know how to process it.
It didn't fill the hole that he thought needed to be filled.
Well,
no, I don't even think it's that. I think it's just the kid really had no idea what to do with the thing that he now had, that he had all the things he wanted.
Play with it.
What do I do?
Do you know what's interesting is I feel like you could tell that story to 10 different people, and 10 different people would be like, oh, he was probably thinking this.
Yeah, right. Everyone just projects.
I think he was experiencing the emptiness of late capitalism. But without having studied economics or sociology, he didn't really
he didn't
know.
Have
that day
know.
Started really, his path.
He didn't really have the understanding of spreadsheet data to really...
Yeah,
it was also weird that everything he wanted was an economics or sociology book.
Yeah.
And he got them all, but he didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Oh, my nephew's Noam Chomsky. Did I not mention? Oh,
okay.
So that probably makes a lot of things
I want
clear.
You to write a one-man show called My Nephew's Noam Chomsky.
But I think...
But that's a very, very real feeling.
I think what it's meant to me lately is that, you know, it's a lot of fun things are happening, or a lot of things are happening, and, you know, and I assume in your case, too. And there is that kind of moment of like, oh, is this it? It's happening? What am I supposed to do? Am I not embracing it? It's like it's the overthinking and not knowing how to, rather than just like,
Right. Well, and also when at a concert, as opposed to a lot of other things, it's if you have to experience a bit of stress or a bit of if you have to enjoy yourself a little bit less so that the audience can enjoy themselves more, that makes perfect sense because ultimately they're the ones who should be having a great time. Yeah. You know, they're the ones who should be getting drunk. Like if I got drunk on stage, I don't think I'd perform as well. I might like mess up my voice or something. I'd probably be like a little bit looser or something. But it's not for me to do that I think. It's for the audience to have a great time. So occasionally that trade-off makes sense.
When you were younger, if you heard your future self or someone else like you talking about, like, well, it's not exactly what you think it's going to be, would you have been the kind of person who'd be like, hey, fuck you, man. You got what you wanted. It's all awesome all the time, and you should never have any problems? Or,
I think... well, I don't know. I think, I guess at any time in your life, you always need something else to kind of look forward to a little bit. So, you know, when you're on tour, it can be difficult because you're playing a show every day and kind of in this weird zone. So you kind of like, then you look forward to time off. And then when you have your time off, you look forward to making new music again. And then when you're making new music, you look forward to performing it for people and getting feedback. And then you do that.
It's a vicious cycle.
But that's the thing that kind of messes, you know, everybody up, I think, which is it's like, you're always looking for the next thing to do. It's always like, even at a smaller scale, like, oh, well, tonight I have a thing to go to. And then, like, once that thing's, and you're like, well, I got to get up in the morning because I got to go and do this, or I got to fly out to this. And that's the thing that I can, that when you have that mindset of just always, it's always like another thing you got to do.
On to the next one.
You kind of realize, you kind of like, life starts like kind of slipping away from you at that. Because it could be 2 years. You're like, oh, I was always just ready. I was always just waiting for the next thing to happen. And it's been 2 years now, and it just kind of passed by. We're always just waiting for shit to happen.
Well, or, you know, it's like, oh, if I could just play this venue, or if I could just play these size venues, and you get that. Oh, if I could just play this bigger one. Oh, if I could just do two shows there. Right. Oh, if I could just have this, you know. Yeah. It's always the – I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse. I mean, the blessing –
It's a curse, Chris.
It is a curse, but it's also a blessing. But it's also a blessing in the sense that it does make you strive to always try to do better. But then the curse side is that you get caught up in that pattern of, you know, like – But when are you going to be satisfied?
Like when do you stop and just live your life?
When's enough?
Right. And I mean, there's obviously many, many moments of satisfaction that come with, you know, having like genuine fans. And, you know, I'm sure you guys have the same experience that people, certainly that makes you feel good. But yeah, in terms of like a career, it is very easy to get caught up just because the way that these entertainment businesses work is that it is always kind of looking for the next move and will you play that venue or something. And then I've had a few moments at being at festivals and watching kind of older bands play who are like the headliner, and you know, they kind of, that's as high as you can go. There's nothing beyond being the headliner. So, you know, when you kind of like watch them and they're finally there, and I kind of realize, like, you know, I don't want to dedicate my whole life to just like trying to reach like the very top. You know, like if that happens, it happens. But there's something good, I think, about escaping that kind of like obsessive.
Yeah, I just wonder like how Paul McCartney feels about being a headliner for 50 years. Like he's been at the top of that game for 50 years.
Well, it probably just feels like, oh, this is just how it is. Like he doesn't even think in terms of that anymore. Yeah. I think he would only ever feel it if it got taken away, and then he'd be like, oh, but that's obviously not going to happen at this point.
I don't know. It just seems, that's mind-boggling to me, that guy. Like, they were 20, whatever, 22, 23.
Yeah, but it's just his life. Like, you can't, yeah. I mean, like, he doesn't know. It's like if someone who had blonde hair would be like, what's it like to have black hair? You'd be
it's
like,
pretty good, Chris, I'll tell you. Right? As you know what
it's nice. Yeah. It's nice.
Is your last name pronounced Koenig? Or?
That's right, yeah, it's Koenig.
So, because we have one of our
mutual friend named Danielle.
Dear friend Danielle Koenig.
Oh, yeah?
Who is the daughter of Walter Koenig, who was
on
Star Trek.
Yeah, my grandfather's name was Walter Koenig, too.
Oh, really?
Different guy.
Totally different guy. Yeah. But it's a Russian?
It's German.
German.
Dick Chekhov's not actually Russian. I'm just letting you know.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I believe everything I see on television.
Yeah, it's the truth is that because it looks so much like Koenig, and there are people who have that last name who pronounce it Koenig, I very rarely correct people. Right. In fact, last night at the after party, somebody came up and was like, wait, tell me how do you pronounce your last name? And I was like, Koenig. And one of my roommates from college, somebody I've known for years, was there and was like, really? and he's like, oh, I always thought it was Koenig. And everybody was like, oh, yeah, we all thought it was Koenig. And I was like, yeah, you know, you can keep saying Koenig. But in German, it's a slightly different pronunciation anyway. So I kind of feel like who cares.
So who's right, really?
Right, yeah.
the Koenigs must be related at some point in some ancestral...
Well, it depends because you got your Jewish Koenigs... Then you got your German Koenigs or Koenigs. So it's unclear like how everybody kind of comes together. But my dad's been involved in some sort of Koenig family listserv.
Uh-huh.
So I have gotten to know like how deep our specific branch of the Koenig family runs. Met some fourth cousins, especially being on tour.
Oh, sure.
There's a lot of, you know, I met some fourth cousins in St. Louis and stuff like that. So they're definitely, you know, a fairly big family. But yeah, I don't know. I used to have a teacher in high school, Mrs. Koenig. There's definitely no relation there.
Oh, because it didn't even say the same.
Yeah.
So you guys can't be possibly related. You could go to Germany and find like a whole branch, I would imagine.
It's possible. Well, the funny thing is, it's a German name, but but none of my family actually came from Germany. In fact, I found this out from the listserv my dad forwards me. Interesting little tidbits.
Ezra, look at this.
Yeah, that basically the OG Koenig dude came from Galicia, which is in Poland. And apparently there's some sort of family band. This is why it got forwarded to me, because there's like some picture of just these like old ass like shtetl dudes holding like a, I don't know, some kind of weird stringed instrument, and so it got forwarded to me like, oh, check it out, like the bands.
It was, you know, your destiny.
Are you sure it just wasn't a picture of Mumford and Sons?
Oh, it could have been. It was
from last weekend.
With the sepia tone.
And it just said, oh, this is like the family band from Galicia. And at first, you know, there's also a place called Galicia in Spain. And I was like, oh, I knew I was Spanish. Yeah. That makes so much sense. And then I looked it up and it's Polish. No,
it's Polish. Yeah. See, Ezra, it skips every fifth generation.
Yeah.
you're great, 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 great. I also want to talk for a second about how much I really enjoy your Babar jacket.
Oh, thanks.
Babar doing yoga.
This is brand new. Somebody gave this to me at the after party last night.
Nice. Denim on denim.
Yeah. That's fucking fantastic.
Hand painted.
They hand painted that.
Yeah.
Damn it, someone gave it to you. You know,
I do think
to Etsy.
We're surrounded by things people have given us.
No, I know that.
Somebody made this blanket.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, people make lots of stuff. Make lots of stuff.
That shit.
But no one has yet made us a Babar jean jacket.
Well, the best part is that it fits. It worked out so well.
Someone just handed it to you at the show last night?
Yeah, well, there's this girl, a young actress who's a big Vampire Weekend fan. We never met before, but she came to the show, and she, once I'd like written a tweet, kind of like a dumb joke about how I wanted a Babar jacket as opposed to a barboard jacket. And I basically was like, I'm going to get a jeans jacket with Barbara. This is like a long time ago. And then at the after party, she just came up and gave this to me, and it fit and everything. And it's really one of the best gifts I've ever gotten.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Right.
What was your reaction on that day when you got everything you wanted?
Huh? What was your reaction?
Well, you know, it's really coming full. You guys know what you're doing. Everything's kind of coming together. Well, you know, it's funny. I guess it's like the things that you really want.
Yeah.
You're surprised by.
Right.
You would think that selling out the Hollywood Bowl, I'd be walking on air, but you know, I'm at the after party, you know, sipping some Patron in the corner, kind of wondering what's the meaning of life. Why do I feel so empty? And then somebody hands you a jeans jacket, and then you're on top of the world.
Back to cloud nine.
You had a Babar-sized jean jacket hole in your heart.
This is what I needed.
Yeah. But see, this is the kind of thing where if this were like the 70s and you were like 70s rock guy,
yeah,
then all of a sudden you would become super obsessed with that jacket, and you'd never perform without it, and you'd get really superstitious about it.
Well, there's still
room for
that to happen.
Are you going to perform with that jacket on?
It depends, you know.
You got the fall coming up, so I'm going to be cold outdoor shows.
Hopefully. Because truthfully, I like jackets, I like sweaters. I'm going in the new direction.
I need to know.
I like jackets and I like sweaters, but you also don't want to be a sweaty pig on stage.
Right.
And this is one of the really, really hard parts about being a guy in a band.
Yeah, I don't think Vampire Weekend is a sweaty band.
Well, no. our bassist is, I don't think I'm blowing up his spot. He would say that he sweats quite a bit on stage.
I'd say the drummer has got to sweat. Like some of those.
He sweats
pretty
more,
fast
but he also.
And hard.
Being a drummer, he can also like wear stuff that, you know, he can wear like a basketball jersey or a tank top or something. But lately I haven't been sweating that much. I've been learning to do more with less.
Do you, every time I've seen you performing, you're usually playing an Epiphone Sheridan.
That's right.
Are you still playing that?
Yeah.
Is it modified? These are questions
no,
I have.
No, it's not modified. It's
stock
the funny
Epiphone
thing is,
pickups you're using.
Yeah.
Wow.
The funny thing is that when the band started, we were at college, and, you know, I'd played guitar, but I didn't even have a guitar with me at school, because I hadn't really been thinking about guitar that much for a while. And then the band started, and I wanted to be playing guitar again. And CT, our drummer, who was originally a guitarist, he'd never really played drums before, was like, oh, okay, well, you can borrow my guitar. And it happened to be an Epiphone Sheridan. And I've never been, like, much of a tech head when it comes to guitar. So I was like, oh, that looks cool.
Yeah.
And it sounds fine. and then I started playing it. And then we just, like, at a certain point, it was kind of like time for me to buy a guitar. And I just bought the same one. And we've kind of stuck with it. And, of course, on record, we use different things. And Rostin plays different guitars. But it really is just, like, the fact that that's what CT had in his dorm room.
Wow. It's a good workhorse.
Now, why did he decide, as a guitarist, why did he say, I'll play drums?
Well, we asked him to, originally.
Was it a group meeting? You're like, we have something to tell you.
Well, I guess, yeah.
We need a drummer.
We started the band. Originally, my vision was to have another friend playing drums, but he was like a friend from New Jersey who wasn't at school, so it didn't really make sense. And then Rostam had the idea that Chris could play drums. And we'd already, like, played music before in other capacities. So we just, like, gave it a try, and it worked.
And then how long before you guys were, like, was there any point where you're, like, maybe you shouldn't play drums? Or, like, did it pretty quickly, like, oh, this makes sense? Or did it take a while before it clicked?
No, very, very quickly it made sense. And I think definitely the kind of... on some of the early songs, the fact that I hadn't played guitar much in a while, Chris had barely played drums, Rostam hadn't played keyboard all that much, all of those things, I think, helped us to kind of come up with more original arrangements.
Yeah, you do
for
have
the
some
songs.
Weird chord changes.
So I think we just kind of realized that it benefited us to not have... Because, like, CT could have been on guitar, and he could have, like, been shredding and stuff, but I think... playing drums probably forced him to be a little bit more creative.
Well, that's a really interesting idea.
Yeah. I remember reading an interview with Paul McCartney once where he's like talking about how they were just like poorly trying to play Chuck Berry songs, and that's what became the Beatles sound. Like that, what came out, because they weren't able to play exactly what they wanted, it sounded something different, and that's what made it them more noticeable to people. Was just that, like, it was like them fucking something up.
Well, he also started as a trumpet player until he realized he couldn't sing and play the trumpet at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, started playing it. So the Beatles originally had a trumpet instead of a bass.
That would have been sweet.
Really yeah, but it's like, you know,
Dave Matthews Band.
You know, you go to Guitar Center and you watch like the Guitar Center virtuosos just like shredding on their various instruments.
And that's what they'll be.
And it kind of, well, I mean,
we could walk across there right now. Yeah. They're right across the street.
That's I don't think there's anything wrong with just loving an instrument technically. You know, if you just want to like learn how to play, you know, Van Halen stuff on your guitar, I think that's like a very noble pursuit. It's very difficult, but to me it doesn't necessarily get you anywhere in terms of like making something fresh.
Yeah, well, knowing every chord doesn't mean you know how in what order you can put them in to make a good song.
Yeah, it's good to be like a little bit frustrated trying to figure out what you want to do.
Yeah.
What do you think goes through the minds of the like guitar store virtuosos when they
wait till somebody walks in and hears me?
Do you think that's what it is?
This lick.
I think that's what happens. Also, it's the same sort of thing that goes on with girls that show up at parties looking to be seen. It's that sort of, they'll see me.
Guys do that.
They'll
like
pick
girls
me.
Who show up at parties and start just like playing Eddie. Yeah, yeah.
They start playing Eruption. Yeah.
I hate that because all the guys make a beeline for them and it's
like,
really difficult to get in there.
Guys.
Well, I think, I don't want to like diss it because especially I think somebody who probably can play Eruption would probably look at my primitive guitar playing and, you know, just think I was jealous. But the truth is, I think there is something satisfying in learning how to do something, learning how to shred. It's almost like, I don't know, running a marathon or something. It's like you're training your brain to do something technically. there's something. It feels good just to like teach yourself something, and you know, it makes sense to me that there are people who you know, maybe they their day job is not in music, but they still, like, on the weekends, like to just, like, learn some guitar stuff.
Yeah, I did a couple months ago. I bought the Bold as Love DVD that teaches you every fucking lick of Bold as Love, the entire album. And I was like, this is actually pretty fun. And now I can play Bold as Love. If anyone wants me to play their
I don't think anyone.
What do you think would motivate? Because, like, literally, we could walk into Guitar Center right now, and there would probably be three people, at least three people, in different corners. Is it that they're just trying out different guitars, or do you really think they're like, this is my, they think of it like a performance?
Well, there's an archetype I see there a lot, because I frequent that Guitar Center and the Sam Ash across the street, but there's an archetype I see there a lot of, I end up there at night sometimes, like, it's like a Thursday or Friday night, and I need to, like, grab some strings or something like that, and there's...
Wait, why are you there?
I'm just an example of strings.
Okay, but what night of the week is
like
it?
Like a Thursday or Friday.
Oh, okay, okay.
Okay, okay. You with me, Jonah?
I'm there with you.
I drove there. I see often older, middle-aged looking gentleman with a girl that is there with him, and I always assume they're on a date. And this is part of the date is let's run into Guitar Center.
Yeah.
And while we're in Guitar Center, I'm going to play this thing that I know how to play.
So he's peacocking.
Over and over.
He's peacocking.
That's what I see a lot happening there.
I mean, even going back to, and I sort of got the joke when I first saw Wayne's World, which was in the theaters.
Oh, right.
And it's like, and no he starts stairway. Playing, it's no yeah. stairway. Is it that, that's obviously a type
which
of...
they had to change when they came out of, when it went to home video. It no longer sounds like Stairway to Heaven
he
when he starts
to play. Just goes and the guy stops.
Because of the rightness, the only time you ever heard them start to play Stairway was in the theater.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But even just you know, that movie's over 20 years old, and even then, and that probably goes back another 20 years of just like that guy in every fucking guitar store.
No Stairway. Denied.
Well, yeah, but maybe, you know, it makes me, you know, in like Washington Square Park, there's people who just show up and start breakdancing.
Yep.
And obviously there's the dudes who are like trying to make money, but then they're on the, you know, outside of that, they're the guys who just start dancing and they're doing like some pretty intense stuff. So they're like half peacocking, but then they're also just trying to like meet other dancers and like show each other their moves. So maybe there is a bit of, I don't know.
It's
just like a lonely guitarist trying to
socialize.
Yeah. Maybe, you know what? Maybe he's hoping that a drummer will just walk up and be like, hey, you're really good, man.
Yeah.
It's Friday night.
You got the goods.
Has that happened? I want to know if that's happened.
Of course that had to have happened.
Right?
That had to have happened. Were a band...
Is anyone in a successful band that has found a fellow member of the band at Guitar Center?
That had to have happened at some point. And maybe it wasn't a Guitar Center, but a guitar store.
No, I needed to be a guitar
maybe
center.
Maybe like a McCabe's or something, like an old guitar store.
Well, McCabe is going to be real folky.
It is. So when Joni Mitchell... What do you guys... now that the album's out and you're touring, are you even thinking about the next thing that you guys are going to do? Or is it just like, well, do you take it one thing at a time?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, everybody always... You know, you obviously get little ideas here and there, write them down, make a little demo or something, but... We're certainly not, like, getting together and earnestly trying to make the next album yet. It's just, you know, it's just difficult being on tour. So, you know, we'll kind of be, like, touring for the rest of the year. And then when we finally have some free time, then I think we can think more clearly about it. And this is something about, you know, this last album was our third album. There's something about these three that kind of feels like a set. So more so than in the times with the previous albums, it kind of feels like now's a good time to, like, take a breath. I just kind of feel like whatever happens next will be, like, a new era.
Yeah.
Well, there was a gap, a longer gap between the third and the second as opposed to the first and the second, right? Yeah, because, like, there was that, I think Contra came out, it seemed like it came out almost instantly. Were those songs that you had written around the same time as the first
one? Some of them were. A lot of them were kind of, like, already cooking, but... That was also just because we really pressured ourselves to get it out quickly. You know, like, after when you have a successful first album.
You just wanted to be like, what sophomore slump? Well, we did it so quickly, you couldn't tell.
I remember the phrase I kept having in my head around the time when Contra came out was just that we really needed to come out swinging. I was also just more, personally, probably, like, insecure then. Because when, you know, the first time that you present something to the public is also the first time that you get love and the first time that you get hate. and especially back 2007, 2008, those were some crazy times for buzz bands. I mean, we're real veterans of the buzz band wars. You know, people starting to learn about blogs and stuff. I mean, that was a crazy time. So, you know, so with our second album, it really felt like we need to make this great. We need to make it different. We need to, like, really, like, show people, like, another side of the band. And we also need to put it out relatively quickly. So we did put a lot of pressure on ourselves to kind of turn it around quickly. And then with this album, you know, after Contra came out, we kind of felt like, okay, now what's most important is just making something that we really believe in and that we're psyched about, however long it takes. And it took about 2 years to make, and that feels like a decent amount of time to make.
That's
a
good amount of time. I don't, you know, there's some bands that I listened to growing up that would put out an album a year. Like Slater Kinney is a band I love, but they put out an album a year for like 4 years, and
yeah,
it got to a point where it's like I needed more time with each album to really let it sink in before.
To digest and process it.
Yeah, exactly. Like another one example is Guided by Voices. They just like kept on putting stuff out, and it's just like,
oh, right.
After a while,
he's written like, yeah, what is it, like 30,000 songs or something.
And he just keeps on putting out solo stuff. And
yeah, I mean, I guess if you can, you should. But for us, it really takes a while to really get enough songs that we feel like are at the appropriate level. So it kind of, it works out nicely. I was a little bit stressed out when we were making the last album because I thought that maybe we were gone way too long. I guess people always worry about stuff like that. You feel like, oh my God, so much time has passed.
Will they remember us?
Yeah, are we going to, when we come back, is it going to be like some kind of like weird reunion? And then, of course, like, you know, going back to like the being connected to things, you have like kids on Twitter being like, oh man, like I loved your album. Your first album was that was like my jam in middle school. Like
that's a weird thing to hear.
I'm about to start at Penn State next year. You know, so there's that type of stuff, and you're like, oh my God, time's passing so quickly. But then you put it out, those years disappear, and it's like, you know.
No. I always think it's kind of the idea of a band and doing 2, 3, 4 albums. There's that thing where people. It's like you make an album and then people love it, and then the second one, it's got to be different enough, but not too different. But if it's too much the same, then people are like, oh, they're just doing the same thing. But if it's too different, people are like, well, they've gone off the deep end. Like, it's finding that how do you, I guess you just can't really make stuff with that in mind because you would fucking go crazy trying to figure out what people are going to want or think. But it seems like the public wants their bands to evolve but not evolve at the same time.
Right. Well, you have to kind of slowly evolve. Thankfully, I think just, you know, being a music fan and growing up obsessively, you know, looking at the discography of bands that I loved, you know, obviously like the Beatles are the ultimate template, but then also The Clash or Radiohead, those are Beastie Boys, those are all bands that stick out as, you know, having had album to album changed and done some very different stuff, but ultimately it all kind of feels like right. It's all part of the same story. So being a fan of those bands, at least, you know, when we're making a record, we don't have to worry about will the world think that it's different enough, because that's more or less what we demand of ourselves. We want to make something that feels like Vampire Weekend but is still kind of different. We wouldn't be satisfied if it sounded too much like the previous album. And then also the sad part is occasionally we'll start working on something and be like, oh, this kind of just sounds like the last album, and it's always bad. We've never had something that was like, holy shit, this could be our biggest hit ever. It sounds a little too much like A-Punk. Let's ditch it. Because it always sounds like the worst, you know, a shittier version of A-Punk, you know?
Right.
It's never going to be top yourself. And also, so it's not like that we're particularly brave or anything. And also you look at people who kind of keep doing the same thing, and it's always diminishing returns. Nobody respects them. They don't respect themselves.
That last Strokes album, they got fucking obliterated. Like everyone was just saying, it's just another album. There wasn't that much of a difference.
There's some deep cuts on that album where they did some pretty different stuff. But when their second album came out, which
had a bunch of different stuff,
which is great, but a lot of people, that was like a big criticism that people had, as they said that it sounded, even though I didn't think it was true, but it goes to show how much that idea of a band staying the same, like you really have to work hard to avoid it, because even sometimes you make something that you think is different and people will still say, same old bullshit.
But like what, that's the thing. When bands change, and I like a band that evolves, you know, over time, like you're saying, like Beastie Boys and Beatles for sure. But there's other bands that I like the product that they kind of, you know, put together originally. Like they're, one of my favorite bands is The Weaker Thans, and I think I brought this up on the Tegan and Sarah episode where it's like, I like that when they put out a new album, it's gonna be comfortable. It's gonna be kind of like going home. Mm. It's gonna be like there's that sound that I'm going to that. You know, they have a product, and I'm going to go to that store and get that product, which is like, you know, nice, even keel, like indie rock stuff. Yeah. You know,
it sounds like drugs.
Yeah.
It kind of is.
Well, you know, there was a recent study that said that drugs and like the reaction that people get with drugs and music are kind of similar.
It changes what's going on in your brain.
Yeah.
Releases.
Makes you leave your family.
Leave
your career.
Music has made a lot of people leave their families to go on the road.
Okay, that's right. Yeah. To keep living the dream.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they get back out there.
I like
what you said, though, about, I never thought of it that way, as like when you said, like with the Beastie Boys or Radiohead, it's like, well, it's still part of the same story. Maybe that's what it is. It's how do you stay consistent with that story? Because obviously, you know, Radiohead, every album they make almost seems like, you know, they're daring the, they're like, try to follow this. You didn't see this coming. You know what I mean? I mean, but the difference between, like, you know, from OK Computer to then, you know, when they did Kid A and the Amnesiac, and it's just like, it got more, the chords and the electronic stuff were harder, a little harder to follow and sink into.
Yeah.
But then ultimately, it was like, I still accept that as like, oh yeah, it's all part of their thing.
Right, and also you imagine some kid, yeah, because you're right, when Kid A came out, people were like, I mean, some people were like, this is insane. This is so crazy. This is so weird. Whereas like, imagine some kid today who's 15 and is like starting to get into music, and they start to like Radiohead, and somebody like is like, oh yeah, listen, OK Computer, listen to Kid A. It would make perfect sense.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be scratching their head and be like, this is the same band, you know?
Yeah. But then they give him Pablo Honey. They'd be like, who are these grunge losers?
Right. Well, yeah, that's possible. But it all makes sense. And yeah, it's because you get the sense that they were doing exactly what they wanted to. The worst is when a band changes and it seems like they're kind of doing it in a half-assed way. Like, they're kind of making their, like, corny, sell-out album, and then you don't respect it. But if there's, like, conviction, then I do think it does feel like part of the same story.
Boy, that's got to feel so bad. If you make a bunch of albums and you're always sort of on the cusp, and then finally you throw up your hands, and you're like, fine, I'll give the public what it wants, and then the public doesn't want that, and you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, that feels real bad.
That's a weird thing about, like, you know, Weezer really dropped off. For me, it's not even the same band to me anymore, but it's like, and you think it's like, well, that's how Rivers evolved as a songwriter, but you can't really say that because he says it in his lyrics that he's trying to make hit songs. Like, he wants to be like a big, huge rock star. He wants to be compared to Justin Timberlake and, you know.
You don't think he's being ironic?
I don't think so. It seems like, you know, like music has to be sincere, and it seems really sincere.
I remember that.
And in interviews, he says the same thing.
I remember the Pumpkins album, the Smashing Pumpkins album, when they came out with Melancholy and The Infinite Sadness, like that double disc.
Yeah.
Was that the one? Did that one blow up, or did that one not do?
That was the huge one.
That was the huge one. And then the one that they followed it up with, like, the public wasn't as into.
That was when they started edging towards leather.
We must never be.
Yeah. Wait, was it Adore or Machinima?
I think it was Or was it Ava? I forget what it was called.
Yeah.
Ava.
But I think people were like kind of into it, but it was Melancholy was so huge.
I just remember hearing him on the because that's when he went from like the Ice Cream Man outfit to like the fucking like the Uncle Fester goth and then like the full body leather cape.
What was that? The World is a Vampire song.
Yeah,
you know, Renegades. Like, it's just like, it just all of a sudden it was just like, oh, they're goth now. I had no idea.
But then the album, that album that didn't do as well. I remember hearing on Howard Stern, he was really mad and frustrated. He was like, I don't know what happened. The fans just weren't there for us on this one. And I'm sure in their mind they were like, yeah, every album's going to evolve in this new way, and we're going to try to break ground, and we're going to try to, but I guess, I don't know, maybe there's no formula to it. It's like, well, sometimes that works and sometimes it just doesn't work.
Yeah, but it's also like, yeah, if the fans weren't there for that one album, it's like, look at how everybody, you know, teenagers and people in their 20s and 30s are all obsessed with Fleetwood Mac Tusk now. Like, that's like the biggest hit album of the past 5 years in some circles is Tusk.
Yeah.
And that was exactly that. The fans weren't there for them coming off one of the biggest albums of all time. That was considered this big failure. And, like, who cares now? Now everybody loves it. So, you know, I guess that's fans have to be ready for a bit of failure. I mean, I'm not ready, but...
I read about that. I was reading about that with when Magical Mystery Tour came out. Everyone was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck? You know, and that has, what, doesn't have that Fool on the Hill? Yeah. And like, there's some amazing songs on Magical Mystery Tour, but at the time, you know, just from what I was read, the press was like, well, they've gone off the deep end.
Yeah.
Like, they don't know what any of this crazy, weird counterculture
shit
is.
That wasn't a real album.
No, it was just like a
soundtrack.
Right. It was a nutty movie.
Shitty movie.
Maybe that didn't help.
It was no help.
Yeah, but ultimately, I think if people make something that they truly believe in, even if it's not quite as successful as some previous stuff, like, the audience eventually will come around to it.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I feel. Like, I like Beck's entire catalog. I feel it's fucking amazing. But I wasn't really into Sea Change when it came out. But then I went back and listened to it. I was like, oh, my God.
I wanted to like Sea Change so much because of how much I dug Mutations. And I thought it was going to be another one like Mutations.
Right.
And when it wasn't, I was like, this is
boring. Have you revisited it?
Yes, it's great.
Oh, that's so good.
But it's just cool to look back. Even if that's not your favorite album, at least you can say, like, he made Sea Change, Mutations, Midnight Vultures, all in a row.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, he didn't repeat himself. It's like, some people are going to prefer one, but it's, you know, that's a respectable career. Yeah.
I just ordered some girl did a selections from his songbook. You know how he
oh,
released
yeah.
a songbook
yeah.
of all the arrangements and all that. And I'm waiting for that record to show up. But it's like some girl that did her version of all those songs.
Oh, that's
wow.
cool.
Yeah, so it should be neat.
I've played through some. It's pretty good.
No,
but I guess it's the sort of the difference between well, are you doing it for yourself or are you doing it for the audience? And but then at what point do you sort of like, well, it's for all of us, you know, like, because you can sort of go into that. I mean, the amazing thing to me about someone like Beck is that he sort of rides that rail between like any one of them. People could be like, fuck you, you know, like that could be it. Oh, that is self. And you're just doing that for you. And it's too private that no one else
can
find
out. You're doing that for you and Xenu.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so far, I think the interests of the band and our audience have more or less been the exact same. So we've been lucky. Could they diverge in the future? We start wanting to make some like weird fuck you shit and people say fuck you back to us.
What's your favorite genre? Weird fuck you shit?
Yeah.
The most
I mean, it could happen. But I guess, yeah, as long as you are psyched about what you're putting out there into the world, it's kind of all you can hope for. But so far, it's been nice. And truthfully, we've done... There's stuff on our newest album that sounds like a completely different band than the first one. It has almost nothing to do with, you know, the sounds or the ideas on the first album. And yet when we go and play these songs side by side, people kind of like fill in the gaps and kind of make it all work because they're able to look at it as one band. So, I don't know, I think you got to like ultimately just give people credit that they'll, you know, be down.
But do you ever write anything where you go, oh, this isn't really Vampire Weekend. It's a different identity. Like, do you have a stash, like a stockpile of stuff that's like, no, this is for something else. I don't know what it is.
Usually rap lyrics.
Really?
Yeah, but I can't. And sometimes I can, like, integrate it into Vampire Weekend, but sometimes it's just too, I don't know. A lot of times when, like, I listen to
rap. Science is too tight.
It's a little bit too tight. I don't want to, like...
Yeah. You don't want to blow up the spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're already killing it in the rock world. Yeah. I don't want to make
people... Yeah, we all remember what happened when rock and rap met. Woodstock 99.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, bring the noise. Anthrax.
Oh, Anthrax with Public Enemy.
That was from the Judgment Night soundtrack.
That was from Judgment Night?
Yeah. The Judgment Night soundtrack had, like, they paired up everybody.
Sonic Youth and Cypress Hill.
Sonic Youth and Cypress Hill.
Oh, right.
I'm trying to remember some of the other. De La Soul and...
Teenage Fan Club,
that's right. Yeah. It was just a bunch of, like, rock and... It was a fucking great soundtrack.
I mean, truthfully, I do believe, you know, it's all music and that, you know, it's take inspiration from all over the place and, you know, it all kind of blends together. But, yeah, I just sometimes... When I listen to, I don't know, like, I've been, like, really obsessed with this A$AP Ferg album, And like a lot of times I find like when I listen to it, I start like writing rhymes in my head that kind of like mimic the rhythms of what I'm hearing. And sometimes it actually turns into something that I can take back into Vampire Weekend, but sometimes it just doesn't make sense to try to sing some of those words, you know.
But I think that's where you always have an opportunity to, at a live show, you could experiment with something totally weird. And if it doesn't work, you know, then people are like, oh, we get to see a fun, weird thing experiment. And if it does connect.
That's true. I mean, we did this cover of Blurred Lines, and I rapped the T.I. part. That was the last time I rapped publicly. I used to rap a lot when I was a kid. I was really into, like, freestyle battling.
What?
Wow. Yeah.
What? This is... Why is this not turned up somewhere?
Well, people have found, like, bits of it that, you know, this, like, one rap group I had. Nobody's ever found this full rap album that I made in high school.
Do you have it?
Thankfully. It's... I don't even know if I have it.
What if your dad actually sends it out with a listserv?
He's oh, yeah, he sends it to the Koenig family. Yeah.
There's some rap in our lineage.
And it's like five generations ago, and they're on these weird fucking steampunk turntables.
Oh, yeah. We've had rappers in our family since steampunk 19th century Poland.
Yeah, yeah. I like that they have to, like, there's like a pedal that to make the turntables.
No, there's a horse. There's a horse. Oh, a horse walks on a thing.
Power the gramophones.
Yeah, 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 it powers, and then it's, and then they basically stop the horse and get him to walk forward and backwards so it goes like he doesn't,
and the horse turns the camera and goes,
you're really painting a picture.
Everybody says hey and the horse freaks out.
Yeah.
That's for me.
But it sounds like you know, like Alexander Graham Bell, come in here, I need you, I need you, I need you. It's just all horse-powered. Horse-powered steampunk. That's a fucking... Yeah. That's what kids are doing
How
now,
many
guys.
Horse? What's the horsepower?
Just one? It's like one a horse. Like a horse or a half a horse.
This is a great concept.
I think, like, steampunk hip-hop would be fucking amazing. Where if you had to create the instrument, sort of like the Fat Albert Junkyard Band gang.
Yeah.
Where it's like you have to create the instruments, and they're all, like, man-powered somehow. Yeah. Man or steam-powered. And
created the Roots.
I created them.
Also, remember the California Love video? When
yeah.
Doing the Mad Max thing? Which is like a little bit steampunk. Like goggles on your head and wear. It looked great on Tupac.
It could totally work. I mean, because number one, the sound would be really cool. Number two, the aesthetic would be amazing.
Yeah.
I think this is... Listen, if you want to do this with us, you're more than welcome to stick around the tour. You can put it off, and then we'll just make this. I have an uncle who has a line into some brass that we could get, and we could stain it with acid, and then
brass uncle,
my brass uncle, yeah,
give him some of that brass.
It's gonna be really good. It's gonna be really great. Where are you guys going next?
San Diego.
Okay.
And then kind of just like touring America for a couple weeks, and a show in Mexico, then. Couple weeks off, but the next few months it's like just all over the place. Europe, Australia.
Where do you live most of the time? New York.
Yeah.
You have a girlfriend?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Having a girlfriend's nice, you guys.
I got two emails from two of my friends that knew I was doing this podcast. They're both girls, and they're like, ask me if he's got a girlfriend. And I said, all right,
done.
Oh wow,
I did it.
So I thought you were about to say that you had two girlfriends.
Yeah.
One upping me.
You were in Boston this
one
weekend.
One upping you.
Yeah.
There are people that are like that. I have a girlfriend. No, I got two girlfriends.
Yeah.
I don't fucking.
It's a Kristen Wiig character.
I got two girlfriends.
Yeah, she does that.
So you're in San Diego. Have you guys ever been to Comic Con in San Diego?
No. But you know what? We just never been there. Although there was a Comic Con. I don't know how well known it is, but we had a day off in Columbus, Ohio, and there's a Comic Con going on.
Awesome.
Walked past a lot of.
Oh, nice.
Super girls.
Who are also very super girls.
It's actually a super girl convention.
Well, if you ever get a chance, maybe come out to Comic-Con. We should have a concert at Comic-Con.
Yeah, I'd love to. I was very psyched to be here in this comic book store. I used to be so obsessed with comic books.
What was your
jam
issue?
Oh, X-Men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still am obsessed with X-Men.
As you should be.
I just always felt like it was the richest batch of characters, and it had like the most social commentary.
Yeah. Yeah, especially the cartoon of our youth.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
There are entire X-Men cases here at my
I got to go look through it.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to reread the Age of Apocalypse. Are you guys nice. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, yeah.
That was really like the pinnacle.
I like the old Jim Lee fucking X-Men stuff.
Jim hangs out here sometimes.
Jim has been.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I can show you his offices in Burbank.
Oh, cool.
I want to go to Burbank.
You want to go to Burbank? I'll show you Jim Lee's
You know, we record a lot of this album in Burbank.
Oh, do you really?
I love Burbank. It's so weird.
So when you talk about modern vampires in the city, it's the city of Burbank.
The city of Burbank. Yeah. Yeah. That's a real city.
I wouldn't consider anything in Burbank to be modern, though.
Your album's entirely inspired by Johnny Carson monologues.
We were recording this like very suburban part of Burbank. That's just where Ariel...
Oh, was it Burbank?
What? yeah, it was the whole town. But we would always go have lunch at this place called Full of Life. That's like a health food store that looks like it started in the 50s, which I love because obviously, especially here in LA, which is like the health food capital of the world, you got all these juice places and stuff. And this is just like straight up old school health food where you get like, you know, it's a kind of like sprouts and avocado on health bread, you know, like old school stuff that like healthy people now would never eat. Yeah. And it's just like such a great vibe. But that, to me, that's some kind of like only in Burbank shit.
Well, Burbank, like large swaths of Burbank are untouched by like franchise. You know, it's like there's still so many like weird independently owned restaurants, toy shops, bars.
But ironically,
a lot of gun shops.
Yes.
But
except for the one, like by our offices, there's that fucking, like, it's
ironically,
all...
when I think I want to go to Chili's, I have to, like, drive to Burbank or something.
Because by our offices is closer to downtown Burbank, the, like, near the airport, and there is that giant where there's, like, the Lowe's, the Starbucks, there's, like, 50 things in one.
Burbank's the place. If you want to go to IKEA, you can go there. And if you want a custom made hat that looks just like Indiana Jones's hat, that guy's a tiny store is out there.
Yeah. I feel like stuntmen hang out in Burbank.
They probably do.
Like that's where like the
falling into
roll.
Beds at IKEA just to be like, it's the one.
Yeah.
It's the one.
Jumping off the
All right, so we're gonna head to Burbank.
All right, let's do it.
It's gonna be fucking fun.
We're at an hour, man. That was our hour.
That just breezed by.
It flies by.
Yeah.
It really flies by.
Anything you want to get off your chest before you go?
Man. Well, No. I'm good.
Does Epiphone now send you guitars?
They've hooked us up sometimes, but it's like, don't need them.
Right.
Got the Sheridan. You got the one. Happy with it.
It ain't broke. Don't fix it.
I'm a simple man.
Just fascinated by that. Just being satisfied with the Sheridan.
Matt has like 30 guitars.
The theme of the day has been satisfaction. And what does it mean for different people and...
We've never had a guest who very succinctly tied up the theme of the podcast at the end, but really I'm thinking about it, and you're exactly right. That's exactly what it is.
From your nephew. That's the philosophical conversation.
From the nephew to satisfied with the babar.
To the jacket. To the guitar.
Yeah.
To being satisfied just being a stuntman out in Burbank.
Yeah. Weirdly, we never mentioned Mick Jagger.
We could have played that at the end.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Oh, let's play it. Let's play the Devo version.
I can't get no satisfaction.
The Devo version of Satisfaction is almost as good as the Folksman version of Start Me Up.
I don't know that.
It's from the soundtrack to A Mighty Wind.
Oh, Mighty Wind.
Yeah, it's Michael McKean just saying, Start Me Up.
Well, we'll end on that. Do you have a cover of that?
Of Start Me Up?
Or Satisfaction?
No, I never did a Stones song. It's not a bad idea. Yeah.
Do you want to get the band over, or should we not do it now, and we'll just do it now?
We'll send it in.
Okay,
we'll
great.
Send it in.
Oh, I wanted to know, how did you guys get together with Richard Iwade to do your video?
Oh,
well, one of the first times that we went to London, like when our record label's based in London, and so they flew us out, and I remember on the way back, I'd heard a little bit about the show Mighty Boosh, and I remember we were all sitting in a row. This one we used to sit next to each other on long plane rides. It feels very quaint to think back, just like because most people in bands, you know, you spend so much time together, everybody wants their space on a plane.
Yeah.
But this is like us, just like these like four nerds, just like four in a row, just on this flight, like sitting next to each other. And I remember I was like, oh, maybe I'll check out the show Mighty Boosh. And there were two episodes on that they had on the in-flight entertainment system, one of which I remember was Nanageddon, which was one of my favorite episodes. And I was laughing so hard that like the dude behind me had to like be like, hey man, I'm eating. You're like shaking my water. And then everybody else watched it, and we all became obsessed, and then we'd watch it all the time. So we were always basically saying to the label, they'd say, oh, we need somebody we're gonna do a TV commercial. We need somebody to do the voiceover, and we'd be like, oh, get somebody from the Mighty Boosh. And then they'd be like, oh, you need to do a video, and be like, oh, can we get somebody from the Mighty Boosh? And so then they hooked us up with Richard, and it was perfect.
That's rad.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah.
Former podcast guest, Richard Iwade.
Yeah, we love him.
Cool. All right. Well, enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Cool.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.